definitely better in every way because of what happened to me. I'm a better dad. I'm a better husband. I'm a better friend. I think I'm just a better member of the community. It's so easy. People look at me and they see me, you know, missing parts and they think it's like bad. But in my opinion, it's the opposite. I mean, I think I've been given a great gift by these experiences and trials I've been through and, you know, everything that's come out of that.
Dory 1, this is Fire Team Delta. Dad's coming home.
Welcome to the Military Veteran Dad Podcast, where it is our mission to bring every dad home. I am your host, Ben Colloy. I'm a United States Marine veteran, husband, and a father. We will bring authentic conversations to inspire action in your life so we can close the gap between the dad you are today and the dad you want to be tomorrow. This is the Military Veteran Dad Podcast.
Welcome back to Military Veteran Dad episode, wait for it, 100. God, it feels good to say that. And it would not be possible without you, the listener. Whether this is your first time listening to the podcast or whether you've been a longtime listener since the beginning, I humbly and wholeheartedly appreciate all the time you've invested in this podcast. My growth would not be possible without the continued support of you guys out there listening and reaching out when something that I said impacted you and allowed you to come home and be a better dad. This podcast has been a personal vehicle growth of mine, and I have loved sharing that journey with you, and I hope that's come through on the podcast. I know it's come through for a lot of you out there because you let me know, and like I said, I truly appreciate every iTunes review, every email when someone reaches out to let me know of what I said impacted their life. And now that we're episode 100, if you know, listening to the previous weeks of episode 100 leading up to it, I was struggling to figure out what to do for episode 100. And I was thinking, go big, go anywhere. I was like, well, how do I figure out who to do for episode 100? And for me, I went right back to my heart. And right at the core of my heart is being a dad. And so I reached out to the Bush Center to find an awesome dad. And they came through flying colors because they hooked us up with today's guest, Bobby Dove. Growing up in Virginia, Bobby Dove loved spending time with his grandfather, a Korean War veteran. They watched the History Channel and war movies together, and Bobby listened to his grandfather's stories from the military and his own childhood. His grandfather taught him good character and respect for authority. He was the most influential person in Bobby's life. In August of 2008, Bobby joined the Army Special Forces, and after 3 years of continuous training, earned his Green Beret in August of 2011. He loved the camaraderie of the military as well as its challenges. Bobby recently founded Hooligan Charters, an inshore and nearshore fishing guide service, as a joint venture with his teammate Cliff, who was one of the first one to come to Bobby's aid in Afghanistan. Bobby has learned of himself that he is resilient and driven. He looks forward to a very full life in a specially adapted smart home provided by the Gary Sinise Foundation. And what we unpack in this episode is how Bobby's life was changed on June 9th of 2012. And I'll let him tell that story because it's so much more impactful of how on that day his life transformed. But as you heard in the intro, it was one of the best days ever because it allowed him to see his life in an entirely new way. And he can't imagine having life any other way. So guys, without further ado, let's get started with Bobby Dove. And like always, if you want to hear my biggest takeaway of this episode, stay tuned for the other side of this episode, and I'll be back. Welcome to the podcast, Bobby.
Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited for this episode for 100 different reasons. I'm super excited for every episode. I realize I say that a lot as a podcast host, but this episode is episode 100. And I could have gotten any guests to come on the podcast, and well, I couldn't have gotten any guests because I'm guests are still out of reach, but I wanted to go where in a different place because today I'm talking with Bobby Dove. He has a story that he's going to unpack for us, but he has a story that I really haven't brought to the podcast. And today we're going to dive right into it and how he has had to redefine his life as a man, as a father, how to be a provider, all of these different things Bobby's going to unpack. So Bobby, go ahead and tell us a little about yourself, your military service, and a little bit about your story and where you are today.
All right. So I'm medically retired Staff Sergeant Bobby Dove. I was a Green Beret in 7th Special Forces Group. I was an 18 Delta and SF medic. Before I was in the Army, I grew up in Virginia. I was actually born in Maryland. My parents split when I was young. My mother, myself, my two older sisters, I'm the youngest of three, moved in with our grandparents in Gloucester, Virginia, which is right by Williamsburg or Yorktown on the Chesapeake Bay. I grew up there. So anytime anyone asks me where I'm from, I always claim Virginia. That's definitely my home. But I was born a Maryland boy where I lived until I was 6 or 7. Grew up in a broken home. You know, there was a lot of things I feel like in my childhood and into and through my adolescence that I didn't really like. Not to say that that's blaming anyone else, but just things that I wish would have been a lot better. So I think even when I was young, I kind of had this idea. You don't really hear a lot of men say, you know, I can't wait to be a dad. But, you know, even when I was younger, I was really excited to, you know, one day start a family and be a dad and you know, start my journey of changing and improving, you know, a lot of things I didn't like in my life. Fast forward a lot of other years, I went into the Army in 2008. My training to be a Green Beret was about 3 years in total. I joined as what's called an SF recruit or an 18 X-ray. So I did basic infantry airborne all at Fort Benning, Georgia. And then I went to Fort Bragg. I did a short prep course, SF selection, got selected and entered the Q course. Because I was a medic, that's the longest version of the Q course. So when I showed up to basic training to when I graduated the Q course, was almost exactly 3 years. Then after that, I got assigned to 7th Special Forces Group, which brought me here to this area in Northwest Florida, Eglin Air Force Base, where we still live, about an hour east of Pensacola. I missed a pretty big part there, kind of given that flash forward. My dad actually died when I was 14. He had a lung disease that he battled very hard, did a great job. And about a year before he died, a little bit over a year before he died, he had a double lung transplant that was a huge success. Unfortunately, about a year later, or just over a year later, he got an infection. And because of the immune suppressants and everything, that ended up taking his life. But even more detail between my relationship with my father and myself, he was an outdoorsman through and through. Hunting, fishing, anything outside was totally his life. And because of that, it totally became and still is a huge cornerstone in my life. Not only is it something that I love to do, but whenever I have difficult times, like we all have in life, and some especially difficult injuries and things I've sustained, the outdoors, especially hunting and fishing both, have always been kind of where I come back to refine myself.
So go ahead and unpack a little bit about what happened in your military service that got you to where you are today.
So after I got assigned a group, I did a lot of training on my team. Most teams have two medics. Because there were some shortages at the time, I was the only medic on my team. So we did pre-mission training and then deployed to Afghanistan, I think about 5 months after I got to group. And that was in very early January of 2012. And in June of 2012, we were on a combat patrol. I was actually driving a dirt bike. We were in a really remote area, so we used dirt bikes and ATVs all the time. And we were returning to our base, and I went over a pressure plate IED with my front tire. So the blast cut the bike in half, took the front end off, took my right leg off above the knee, crushed my pelvis, knocked me out, and broke my arm. Burnt my hand really bad. About part of my hand was still on, but unusable. So I was knocked out for about a minute. I came to. When I woke, I awoke to the sound of one of my teammates on the radio saying, "It was Bobby. It was Bobby. He's messed up." All of my training, you know, immediately kicked in to self-aid for myself. So I tried to break a tourniquet off my plate carrier. Because of the effects and my hand was broken and everything, I couldn't even break a single rubber band to get my tourniquet off. So I tried to roll onto my right arm, which is basically the only thing I could see, which was really bad at the time. And when I rolled, I felt my left leg hit the ground where I thought my right leg still was, but, you know, obviously was not. So a couple teammates got to me. I said, "Tourniquet, tourniquet, tourniquet." They went to work, stopped the bleeding. By all means, instantly saved my life there. We very rarely had another Army medic with us that was in support for us. And that happened to be one of very few days where both of us were on the mission. So a few minutes later, Army Specialist Mike Holguin got me and continued treating me and stuff like that before I got picked up by a medevac helicopter, flown to Kandahar, and then bounced around. And about a week later, wound up in Walter Reed at Bethesda, Maryland. So when I woke up, I was in an induced coma all that time. And one of the hardest things that I dealt with then and still to this day is that, you know, for me, it was the blink of an eye from going from Afghanistan to Walter Reed. and it had actually been about 9 days time. So when I woke up, my family was there, my now wife was there, and I didn't believe it was them. I didn't believe I was there. You know, in my mind, it was like, this is impossible. A really tough part that I had to deal with. But
I can imagine that that part was a little bit like losing 9 days of your life. You're like, what happened? What, where, how'd you get, like you said, but then also just kind of like, is it a bad dream? Like you did just wake up and this happened. Like, is somebody going to walk by eventually? And I'm just going to wake up and realize, oh man, that really didn't happen. And maybe I'm way back in Afghanistan as well. I can imagine that that's something you felt there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, being the medic, I just really love taking care of my brothers. So, you know, not only was I broken, but, you know, I couldn't watch over my bros. You know, all of that was, you know, kind of the perfect storm of, you know, this mountain coming on top of me of everything that has happened. I'm going to lose my job, my, you know, my whole purpose in life.
So there's a question I want to ask going back a little bit further in your timeline. So your dad died when you were 14 and you had a pretty healthy relationship with him, sounds like.
Yes.
So fast forward a little bit further, what brought you to the Army? Like, what were you looking for to be filled in your life that you no longer felt, or you didn't feel like you could get it anywhere else other than the Army?
So I think with my dad being a big outdoorsman, we were always like shooting, doing things outside. So, you know, I really took to, you know, guns and shooting sports and things like that. So having a job or a career that was outdoors was kind of a big part for me. But after we moved in with my grandparents, my grandfather was a Korean War vet. And, you know, he was always talking about the Army and we were always watching the History Channel. And I think those combined kind of set it in my mind that I really
it was a perfect storm for you to join the Army.
Exactly. Yes.
Your mom's sleepless nights was doomed the moment those two got combined.
Yeah. Greatest decision I ever made. I've never regretted being in the Army or volunteering for SF or anything like that. I absolutely loved every second of it.
When you think about losing your dad back then, was there a part of you that now you understand that you have kids that you maybe lost a certain set of programming that you, or maybe even your parents separating? Like, is there a part of you now that you have a family that you didn't have back then when your family separated or after your dad passed away?
Yes. So, you know, I was young when my dad first became ill. So he had a disease called primary pulmonary hypertension, which is a lung disease. And, you know, I didn't really understand that at the time. And my dad, you know, struggled a lot in terms of pain. He had basically no energy, lost a ton of weight, became really weak. You know, his body just wasn't absorbing oxygen and everything like that properly. So, but the thing that I observed through all of that was, you know, he was obviously going through a really difficult time, but we still did everything that we wanted to do. You know, we still hunted, we still fished. I absolutely loved my father, you know, and I know that he loved me and my sisters. At the time, I knew he did. Now I'm a father myself. You know, I know that that was even a million times more than I perceived at the time. But, you know, I think going through injuries of my own, you know, it kind of makes a full circle. And now, you know, that I'm a father, you know, I can continue that example of that never quit attitude, you know, grit before anything.
So it sounds like that was definitely a piece of wisdom, but then also a legacy that he left with you is you're only given up when you're dead and you never quit and you continue to keep going forward. And as long as you got a breath, you need to keep trying.
Yeah. We'll rest when we're dead.
Yeah. There's plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. Sounds like a good Army slogan that probably both the Marines and the Army use. You can get a nap when you're dead. When you started having a family, how did having the injuries play into that? Because I know you probably maybe didn't feel like I could be like the dad that you had because you couldn't walk, or that you probably maybe even didn't think you could do all the outdoor stuff. Like, there's probably a lot of reprogramming what's possible. Like, you probably had to say like, yeah, I could do that. Or I could find a guy that knows how to do that with the type of situation that I'm in right now. Because you're confined to a wheelchair now, correct?
No. So I'm a very high amputee on my leg, and I'm a below elbow amputee on my right arm. So the prosthetic leg that I wear, I am pretty mobile. The one that I used to wear, I was pretty mobile, but it caused me a lot of discomfort. I basically had to wear a ratchet strap around my waist to give me stability. Until about a year ago, I had an operation called osseointegration, where they basically put a giant screw in what's left of my femur, comes out of my skin and my leg now hooks straight to that. So I'm still in the rehab phase for that. So I'm not on my feet quite as much as I used to be, but I'm starting to get pretty close again now. I do use a wheelchair at home, you know, so most of the time when I'm around my kids in the house and everything, I am in a chair. But if we leave or go do something, assemble myself, so to say, so that we can do some better things.
How did you walk yourself through that process of going from Walter Reed, like your life is, you just woke up and how the rest of your life looks has completely changed, to now being a dad, to just not giving up on yourself? Because many veterans, in your case, dads, they give up, and it's very quickly, like I'm sure you can speak to this as well. You very quickly have to talk yourself out of that. I'm not a burden, because even when you have all four limbs, many dads feel like a burden with their PTSD or their anger issues or any crap that they haven't dealt with. They'll feel like a burden, and that's what leads them to take your own life. So in your case, it's probably even easier to slip into that phrase or in that mode that you're a burden. So how did you process through that to be someone that was just as capable within the family as any other dad?
So yes, I most definitely had the burden feeling. And to be honest, I still drift in and out of that all the time now. Before I was hurt, you know, I was really independent. I was always someone that I wanted to do my own thing. Basically, as soon as I graduated high school, I was out of the house. You know, I like to travel, you know, so I've always been kind of my own self-sustaining individual, so to say. So when I went into that phase of, you know, dependency, that was very hard to swallow. And it still is. You know, my wife, who, you know, sometimes referred to as my caregiver, you know, still does a lot for me at times. And it still makes me feel like a burden. And that's pretty hard for me to swallow.
Was there a particular role model or a story or a mentor that you had that helped provide an example of that you are not to that? Because it's almost an unfightable war inside your head. And it takes people, the right kinds of people, to really perceive. It's kind of like what the Invictus games provide. They provide, like, there are people doing things out there that have way more issues than I do. And I have all four limbs, and you're like, man, if they can do it, I can do it type scenarios. So what was that for you?
Yeah. You know, so when I was injured in 2012, Walter Reed was at max capacity for inpatient, outpatient, rehab, everything. So it was kind of cool, you know, in a sense of when I was in my very early stages, I was able to see a lot of other wounded guys that were in their late stages. And, you know, people that were as injured as me or in other cases, even worse, that, you know, outdoing, you know, still living great lives and still great, you know, family people, fathers, you know, all that. There's one part in there that I'd like to not leave out. So when I was in Afghanistan, I had decided that I was going to propose to my girlfriend at the time when I got back. This is obviously before I got hurt. And I really wanted to have kids, you know, maybe not immediately, but, you know, down the line. When I was injured and, you know, when I was first in the ICU, my pelvis was crushed. I had a lot of lower body injuries. So I had a lot of swelling and, you know, some other things. So the doctors were like, we don't know about your function in terms of if you can still reproduce or not. And to be honest, like, that was the biggest punch in the gut I had gotten, even more than losing limbs and all the
especially
pain.
If you were dreaming about it since you were a teenager.
Yes. They mentioned, you know, we can test and this. And I was like, you know what? I don't even want to know right now. I'm just going to continue to set my goal. I will, you know, be a dad. You know, I will be a husband, and not only those things, but good at it. And, you know, I was like, you know, I'll just see God's will in the end. And either that means I have kids of my own or we adopt or something, but one way or another, it's going to happen, you know?
And that's definitely not a lesson that you want to leave out there. And we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary, and I was listening. We drove 4 hours up north Wisconsin, and I was going through all my old playlists in my phone as I was going up. And one of the songs that it played was the Rascal Flatts. I think it's Rascal Flatts, I'll Stand, where I want to say it's like a story of a car accident where she gets out and walks, and then she gets hit and paralyzed, and her recuperation is that she stands up at the wedding. And it really resonated back to me that, did you walk down the aisle for your wedding, or did you?
Yes.
Yeah. It's perfect marriage to that idea of walking and saying, like, I'm going to stand and rise up to this monumental occasion. and almost have like the rest of your life defined by, if I can rise and walk down the aisle, like I'm capable of really anything as long as I don't give up on myself.
So another part to our marriage is my wife loves Disney, and she always told me that she wanted, you know, someone to propose to her during the fireworks at Disney World. So when I was still in the ICU, I asked her father if I could still ask her to marry me. He said, yeah. And I was like, you know, at that time, I had no idea what my real injuries were because I was in a coma for so long. I literally was almost like a quadriplegic. I couldn't move at all. But I was like, you know, I was like, Dave, his name's Dave. I was like, Dave, I'm going to relearn to walk and propose to her, you know, just how she always wanted. So that coming December, only 6 months later, I did exactly that. I think, you know, we were talking about being a burden earlier. A lot of that for me, I think, has been continuing to set goals, and not only goals to get through it, but ambitious goals, you know, not I want to walk, but I want to walk.
Why do you want to walk?
Exactly. Yes. The why, you know, so that's just been a huge thing. And I try to keep that ball rolling. You know, as soon as I reach, you know, a goal, you know, a lot of times in the military, you know, we talk about metered targets, you know, our 5 meter target, 50, 100. So, you know, we're setting those short goals and long ones. And I just try to keep that going.
I could definitely see how setting goals, and I can definitely see you do it naturally. Was that something your dad taught you? Because not everybody sets real goals for anything in their life, and that's how they get into the drift mode. So where did that instinct come from that I need to set goals to get in, to achieve what I want?
To be honest, I was kind of a not very good student and everything like that when I was growing up. You know, I was a mess up without saying, you know, bad words. So when I got older and looking back and maturing some, you know, I realized one of my biggest problems was that I was just drifting around. You know, I wasn't setting goals. I didn't have that defined purpose. And when I got into the Army, and, you know, I had these goals of like graduating different schools and, you know, scoring certain scores on tests and things, you know, I realized how once I put my mind to it in that fashion, I basically accomplished whatever the heck I want to. So I just, amputee or not, you know, I try to keep that mentality. Goal setting has been huge for me.
I can imagine there is a process within what you've had to go through where you're leaning on other people, which even if you have all four limbs, veterans, military men, we really suck at asking for help. And so I'm wondering, where did you see the like learning the skill to ask for help? How have you seen that unfold in your life in ways that you maybe didn't expect when it first happened to you?
I have, and I still am, you know, exactly that person that has a hard time asking for help.
Even though God tries to remind you every day, ask for help.
Yeah, dozens of times every day. Yes. So, you know, and I mean, that means, you know, asking my wife to help me, hand me something or you know, something bigger in terms of like treatment or help or whatever. So we live in a house built by the Gary Sinise Foundation. I was offered some things like, you know, adaptive homes and stuff before, and I kept putting it off. And a friend of mine finally talked, I actually tried to apply him. He talked me into applying also, you know, and it's turned out to be one of the biggest blessings for us. But at the same time, I also carry a lot of guilt, you know, for receiving stuff like that. I've never felt, you know, entitled to those type of things. So, you know, asking for help, you know, it's always been hard. I kind of try to approach it as though, you know, what would I say to a friend of mine? I would never judge any friend of mine for asking for any type or amount of help. So, you know, why the heck would I judge myself? So I try to keep that how I'd look in the mirror about that topic.
I'm not sure how you're going to answer this, but it's one of my favorite questions to ask in the podcast. If you could go back in time when you just woke up at Walter Reed and leave a sticky note sized piece of advice that you needed to hear then, and that would have kind of fueled your perspective, what advice would you give yourself when you just woke up?
So I would tell myself, don't worry about a damn thing. and that may sound odd, but, you know, I talked to a lot of, you know, other people that were wounded after me and everything, you know, and the first thing I always try to say, I was like, man, if I could go back in time to when I woke up, I spent so much wasted time and anxiety and, you know, being depressed about thinking I wasn't going to be able to do all these things, and come to find out I do every single one of them anyway. So, you know, I mean, I just feel like I totally wasted my own time and, you know, worrying about stuff that in the end was definitely going to be okay.
I can definitely see how that would be something. And even when you have everything in your life that most people have, that idea of over worrying and overthinking, I mean, it's plagued me, even this podcast and different things that I'm trying to do. Like, it's so more important to just believe that you can take action and do it than it is to really figure out and worry about it. And it's that, just that, it's probably like the internal anxiety that you're not going to be enough, because when you're in the military and you're serving, you being enough, your friend next to you is counting on it. Like, you need to be enough to be able to make sure he comes home and that the team operates in the way. And that if you don't do your job, the whole team might suffer. That enoughness, I could easily see how it carries over on the other side when you're going through this of, I'm now missing pieces of myself and physically, and I'm not going to be enough to make sure that everybody that I love in my life is going to be taken care of.
Exactly. And honestly, I still go through that every day, you know, whether it's a minute a day or 23 and a half hours of a day, you know, I still drift in and out of that. I think it's a lot of misconceptions that, you know, at a point you get over it all, but it's really just, you know, you kind of might maybe extend the period of time, you know, between being in those slumps. So
as a father, from this particular view of life that where you're at and what you have to deal with every day, how do you think your kids have changed you in ways that you maybe didn't expect being a father with this type of situation?
So I love being a dad, and I absolutely love both of our kids. We have two. Our son Wyatt just turned 6, and our daughter Eva is about to be 4. They obviously weren't born until after I was injured. So they grew up with, you know, daddy being in a wheelchair and, you know, having robot parts and all this kind of stuff. So that's just totally normal to them. I think what I always told myself, even if I'm disabled, you know, maybe I can't, you know, play football the same, you know, with my son as other dads do, but I can sure as heck love my kids, you know, just as much or more than anybody else. So, you know, I just try to be really supportive of them. Tell them I'm proud of them like 3,000 times a day. You know, to my knowledge, I don't think that they think they're missing out on anything. So, you know, we still do a lot of fun stuff.
And that feeling of being loved, there's, I can't remember the guest we had in the podcast, but he gifted us the advice that there's several studies that like the best predictor of a child becoming a good adult is how consistently did they feel loved through their childhood. It doesn't matter how many sports, it doesn't matter how many different things you taught them, what schools you sent them to. The feeling of love from their father and their mother is like the core fuel that runs throughout your life. I mean, if you think of an adolescent boy that's like maybe 18, 20, and he didn't grow up with a father, there is a feeling that he walks around, whether he knows it or not, of just trying to be approved by someone. And when you have that from your father, like being proud, like I say it to my son as well, over hundreds of different things, all of that is so impactful because that's the fuel that keeps them going. And what you experience on the other side of waking up, and maybe this was growing up in a split household that it wasn't consistently affirmed every day, that you had doubt that you were enough to do it. And I think if you have the type of father like you are right now, where you're always instilling that you are enough, I believe in you and you can do anything, like there isn't that doubt that creeps in when because they've been challenged growing up and proved with their father's reaffirmations that they are enough and they can go out in the world and figure out how they fit in and actually try to make an impact versus, you know what, I can't really do that because people might judge me. Like that was something that I haunted with. I always haunted like, oh, I can't be that person because that's not who I am or that's not how people see me. And I never really could see my own value. That was something I really struggled with to understand, like what makes me special.
Man, you're like reading the thoughts right out of my head.
That's so, a good podcast interview.
So exactly how you were just saying, you know, the need for affirmation, right? So I struggled with that a lot in adolescence because my parents were split and I didn't get to see my dad a lot. Then he died. And then, you know, my mother was always working her butt off many times, two jobs, you know, to have what we needed. So I think when I had relationships and everything, you know, into my adulthood, I kind of was my own worst enemy in how, you know, I was dealing with things. And I think a lot of it goes back to that, you know, so that's really why, you know, I'm always trying to affirm to my kids, you know, how proud I am of them, you know, how much I love them. I don't want them to have, you know, those types of struggles. So
you got the perfect combination, boy and girl. Are you going for a third one at some point? Or are you guys done?
I think we're good.
You're good. It's official now. Your wife might listen to this podcast episode.
Well, I think she's more done than I am. So
that's what my wife is. She's done more than I am. I would love to have four kids, but she's pretty much done.
At the beginning, we talked about having more, but you know, we both really love what we have right now. They both get their own kind of attention. They both get a lot of attention. You know, I think they have a lot of great qualities because of that. So we're probably going to stick it with two.
I want to go to a different topic. Well, same topic, but a different channel. So a lot of what dads with either PTSD or a physical injury, like the most common advice is people figure out how to move through it is when they find the purpose within what happened to them, not as a to them, but for them. What is that for you? How has this really happened for you and that you've been able to find purpose even through this happening for you?
Yes. So ironically, I think what happened to me was literally the greatest thing that ever happened to me. From the moment where, you know, I first woke up to where being a medic and knowing my injuries, I knew that my chances of survival were extremely slim. So, you know, at that point, I was flooded with regret, not of what I had done, but all the things I hadn't. You know, I hadn't married this woman that I love. We hadn't had our kids yet. You know, all the deer I hadn't hunted, the fish I hadn't
so caught, much unfinished you know. Business.
Yes.
The 20 point buck.
Yes. So, you know, that now becomes my purpose. But a huge part of that, you know, I obviously need purpose outside of my house alone. So being a medic, you know, I wanted to do that because I love taking care of people. Done a lot of nonprofit stuff and, you know, trying to help other friends of mine in similar situations and, you know, all that together combined. You know, if it's just one part, you know, I think a lot of it would crumble. But, you know, all that combined together is really kind of what sets it good for me.
And just being able to, once you see, like, there's so much, like, this is what, so I didn't have PTSD, so I've only really observed it in 100 episodes that we've got with you now, is that so much of what is happening, they find that purpose. But once you realize it's happened, like, it's like having 1,000 snap-on toolbox, so 1,000 piece snap-on toolbox. And I've said that advice a lot, but I feel like it's so true because you just have so much life experience compounded within a 30-second window that I'm sure there's been moments in your life that you have a viewpoint, a piece of wisdom, holding your hand out, I'm positive, for a friend who's just coming home maybe without a limb. Like, you wouldn't have been able to do any of that without that experience. And you wouldn't have been able to be that friend that reached out. Just like so much of what happens is, and more importantly, probably with your son and daughter, there's going to be a moment that you're going to teach and you're going to pull back from your toolbox of what happened. And you'll be like, man, I couldn't have taught that lesson without that wrench. And I never knew what that wrench was for until this moment. But now I can't imagine doing life without that wrench.
I'm definitely better in every way because of what happened to me. I'm a better dad. I'm a better husband. I'm a better friend. I think I'm just a better member of the community. So, you know, it's so easy. People look at me and they see me, you know, missing parts and they think it's like bad. But in my opinion, it's the opposite. I mean, I think I've been given a great gift by these experiences and trials I've been through and, you know, everything that's come out of that.
So I want to go to something that you talked about before we hit record and you hinted at it, but I want to go deeper into it, that part of what happened to you and what happened for you is that all the abundance of time that you had in the future to accomplish your goals was all immediately taken away. And then you only got a bite-sized piece back to really start chipping away at it again. How did you redefine your life once you realized that my time almost went down to zero? And then I started getting a few minutes back and now I've got my entire life back. What's different now that you've had essentially that life or death moment in front of you?
Another weird part is the feeling of imminent death for me was, again, one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given. And it's, you know, we spend so much, I feel like all of us at times or another, we spend so much time wasted, you know, worrying about stuff that doesn't even matter. You know, like what we wore to this or our hair was messed up or, you know, what we said exactly, you know, it doesn't even matter in the real scheme of our lives and our family's lives. So being able to look at something in the terms of I'm not distracted by these things that don't even matter. I'm focused on, you know, the actual rebuilding my life and my families and everything was awesome. And I feel like people think that I'm not being honest when I say that, but I mean, straight up, like, it was the greatest gift I've ever been given.
I can definitely hear that in your story and see how and you're in the early stages of your fatherhood, but man, 30 years from now, when you look back, like, you're gonna be like, that's one hell of a legacy that came from something very negative. And this is what a lot of people get hung up on, that these negative moments aren't like, it's not the ending. It's just a period. And you can start a new sentence right on the other side, hit space twice and start typing a new sentence that you can really redefine your life in a different way. I think I know the answer to this next question, but I'm going to ask it just to clarify and give you a chance maybe to pick something different or to confirm exactly what's in my head. What do you think you really, really needed to learn in life that maybe the Bobby before the accident wasn't honest with himself on, and what you became honest with yourself on the other side, that this really almost had to happen to you for you really to learn this lesson and have the life that you have now?
I kind of think about that often, and I can't really put my finger on a specific thing. I think I was, prior to the Army, I had a encyclopedia of flaws. I worked on a lot of those, not trying to say I had become perfect or anything, but I had worked on a lot of those, you know, up until my time, especially, you know, going through, you know, all this hard training and especially, you know, my time in combat and everything. So I just get to where I can focus, you know, kind of how we were just talking about. I mean, I feel like I was kind of scatterbrained before, and a quality that I've really got is that, you know, understanding what's really important. And, you know, what's really important is, you know, what's really in my heart, not somebody else, what they're telling me or trying to push me into. So I think that is probably one of the best things that I got out of it.
You actually just put two thoughts together, and I'd be selfish not to share what I just put together in my head. That based on what you were talking about there, what came to my mind was, and maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong here or not, but before that accident, the capacity to love yourself was very low. And on the other side, you really, really had to dig deep. And now you have an abundance of love for yourself. And I wonder if that true love for yourself and who you are and accepting exactly who you are with all the flaws was something that this was the teaching vehicle that really had to crack that open and allow yourself to feel the love for yourself, not, and then receive it from others too, probably as well.
Yes. So it's kind of funny. I feel like I just spent all this time trying to put something into words, and you obviously knew exactly what I was talking about. But
that's the power of a podcaster, because we hear it said so many times and my brain works like MacGyver and it just takes random bits of information and pieces of them together. So it's a curse and a blessing, because when I use it on my life, I get overwhelmed. When I use it to other people, like, oh, that's a really insightful thought. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I mean, the self-love and I think more so self-approval, you know, was always a problem of mine. You know, it's definitely gotten better. But you know, I still deal with that a lot. You know, I still feel like I'm never going to be good enough for my wife or, you know, stuff like that, just because guy in a wheelchair and things, even though I would never view somebody else in that situation that way, you know, that I'm just super hard on myself. So learning to approve myself and not be so hard on me, you know, it has definitely been a struggle, but something very good to learn.
I've had to learn it the hard way, but it was like in December, January, it hit me with this idea that to really move your life forward, you have to look in the mirror and love unconditionally who you are on the outside and on the inside. And you have to realize there's good, bad, and the ugly, and you got to approach it with love all around, because it's all happening for you. And when you can get to that point where you can start to unconditionally love yourself, maybe not all of it, but certain pieces, that's when you can unconditionally love the others in your life, your wife, your friends, because then you're not expecting anything in return, because you're kind of meeting your own needs for love. And you're not having like covert contracts within a marriage or different things like that, because you're just bringing love versus like, I'm going to give you love, but I'm expecting this love in return at the same time. Like that's something that I had to really go through this year in the past has been a big, huge area of growth for me in my own area. So I want to ask a question. How have you led with your son and daughter to make sure that they know that they're enough? So there's two things, like you can reaffirm it, but how do you actually give them examples in their life to know that they're enough other than reaffirming it? Like a lot of times it's either putting them through tests where they have to rediscover, kind of like what boot camp does, like it just rebuilds that grit. So what does that look like for your parenting and fatherhood to really make sure that your kids understand that Instagram isn't where your daughter gets her value from, it's from within inside?
You know, I think I, for my approach, I try to have the foundation kind of, I always tell them that I'm proud of them and I'll always love them. So, you know, and that's not, I say that at times when they're not doing anything. So it's not, you know, I'm not proud of you because you performed well or right. Exactly. You know, it's the only condition is that, you know, you're our child and I love you. I think, you know, that's just one of the things I was talking about, you know, some things that I thought could have been improved in my childhood, the total affirmation and not conditional. So I try to, you know, push that into them, I guess, so to say.
So your son's 6 years old, right?
Yes.
So if it's anything like my six-year-old son, this is really where he's like pushing the boundaries of the rules, pushing the boundaries of who he is, what he likes, his curiosity. He just had his first sleepover the other night. Like that was its own first big thing. And like, he's going out on his own. How have you led your son at that age six? And like, what are some of the examples maybe you could share with us some just good advice on how to parent a six-year-old son to make sure that he grows up into a strong man? Because it starts at these early ages. This is the ages where the seeds are planted for later in life.
Yeah, so he's definitely getting to the point where, you know, he's obviously too smart for his own good. I think, you know, I definitely try to not be, you know, the hover parent, you know. I try to give him some guidance, but at the same time, I do want him to, you know, understand failure on his own and consequences, you know, on his own versus not just getting in trouble for something, but why, you know, why this wasn't a good idea, why making this huge mess, you know, wasn't a good idea, you know, stuff like that versus the consequence to him is just being told no. You know, he actually sees the negative repercussion.
Something that my oldest daughter is eight and my son's six, and I didn't figure this out till January with my oldest. And I think it's something that many adults mess up as well, is we use words like responsibility. We don't probably use integrity, but we have it in the back of our head, especially in the military. But these words don't have shared definitions. And what I really realized with my daughter was I use these words like responsibility. There's a few other ones that I can't think right now, but I never had actually explained what these words are and making sure that she understands like what these words mean and what actions resemble these words. Like what are some examples? So something within those that when you're at that early age is making sure you operate on a shared vocabulary, because it's so easy to assume that they know what you know, especially as a parent. Like you just don't sometimes have time to slow down and be like, does he really know what that means? But like a bedtime talk is really where I use a lot of this teaching talk for explaining vocabulary, talking about something. I've been really working on responsibility. Like, what does it mean for a boy to be responsible, to grow up into a man? Like that means you pick up your stuff, because there shouldn't be needing someone to come behind you to pick up your stuff. And you should be able to take care of your own room without someone telling you to do it. Like that is responsible, but compartmentalizing it in its own little gift box. Like, this is the example. This is our definitions. This is what I expect responsibility to look like for you. That is a huge portion within raising a son. I want to ask another question. Have you ever thought of doing like initiation with your son? Has that been ever something that's been introduced, or maybe you did it with your father out in the woods?
My dad, we never did any sort of like initiation thing. I've never really thought about that with my son, to be honest.
Sorry, now you got to start thinking about it.
Yeah. I do. You know, we're getting to a point where, you know, he's been shooting a BB gun and we have a bow that he shoots. And, you know, we talk about a lot of safety and, you know, that's kind of like, I think at first, you know, he wants to shoot. And, you know, I really try to drill in that, you know, there's a lot of things that have to happen before we even get to that point. And as for your first question, so I try to kind of really hammer into them that they have a choice, you know, so when you're seeing them do something, instead of just yelling at them about it, you know, tell them, you know, you have a choice to either continue doing it that way, or you can choose to either stop or do it a different way. You know, so, you know, I think that's kind of a way of, you know, without using big words like responsibility and, you know, stuff like that, they understand, you know, I can go left or right. I can dump this whole box of Legos out and then have to clean it up for the next 5 hours, or I can just get out what I need, you know.
And you were talking before we hit record that choice is something that you had to learn as well on the other side, that every time I have a thought, I have a choice to do something with that. And my reaction is the only choice that I have. And there's lots of inputs, including your accident. And that choice is something that you really had to learn through the process of redefining your life of every time I wake up, I have a choice with something. So go ahead and unpack what your perspective is on that for us.
Yes, definitely. So very early on in my recovery, it was very apparent to me that, you know, I could have my body parts taken, abilities, you know, whatever else, you know, stricken from me without my permission. But the one thing that I always retained was my ability to choose how I would react, or my ability to choose, you know, what I would do next. You know, I think that's one of the things that I really try to show an example of to the kids and everything is we all, you know, want to do things or something else, but, you know, we have the ability to think, you know, think about it for a second and think, you know, which direction is really going to be the best one, you know, for long-term success. Or, you know, how we were talking about goal setting earlier, you know, which one is really going to inch me closer to that goal rather than, you know, just push me in some drifting random direction.
And you reminded me of a story when you were talking about the BB gun of, I can't remember where the story came from and I'm going to mess it up, but this talk of like, if you give a man an axe and you send him in the woods for 6 hours, the right process is spending 5 hours sharpening the axe and 1 hour cutting down the tree. I think I got most of that right. There are a few pieces I think I messed up, but the basic idea is there's so much preparation into that one bullet. I mean, even the practice of like in Marine Corps boot camp, I'm not sure what it is for the Army. We spend an entire week pointing our gun at a can with a little dot on it, an entire week without ever actually putting a bullet in the chamber. I mean, a full day, every day for an entire week, just pointing the gun because the fundamentals are that much more important than worrying about pulling the trigger and getting the bullet to go down range because there's so much underneath that. And I mean, you're teaching a very little lesson, but that's as you start to reinforce that lesson of what you execute on isn't just as important. It's all the little stuff that leads up to it.
Yes. You know, being a six-year-old, he obviously doesn't have the attention span to dry fire for a week. But yeah. every time, you know, every time before we do, you know, we re-go over the safety check, you know, making sure we have a backstop, you know, there's no people or dogs or anything out there. And then, you know, we'll get in the prone and I'll have him practice his breathing and we're talking about visualizing, you know, and, you know, we'll probably do that for a good 5 to 10 minutes, you know, before we shoot anything, you know. And, you know, in our case, so far, we're just shooting some cardboard with a Red Ryder BB gun. But, you know, so I think, you know, just how you're saying that I've never heard that axe analogy before, but that's excellent, you know.
I think it was somehow related to like, I actually don't know. I feel like Abraham Lincoln has some connection to it, but if you send a man to the wood, chop down a tree and you give him 3 hours, he's going to, a good man will spend like 2 hours sharpening it in 1 hour because you like hitting a tree with a broken axe, you're just going to wear out. Like, I mean, think of how many times a veteran bangs a head against a wall before he thinks of, you know what, I'm using a dull axe here. And it's, or another good axe analogy is the same thing. You go and you send a lumberjack into the woods to chop down trees and he does awesome the first day and he keeps going, but then each day he gets a little bit slower and the lumberjack or the manager of the lumberjack doesn't understand why. He thinks he's just being lazy. Turns out he wasn't sharpening the axe. Like it's just as important to like when you get into the motion, like you need to resharpen your tools because they do get dull after use. And there's so much just self-growth within that story that you can't just keep hitting the same axe, the same thing with expecting a different result without ever sharpening it.
Yeah.
There was another random story that's very similar back when you talked for asking for help of there's a story. I can't remember where this one comes from either, but it's about a guy in the middle of a flood. He's on the top of his house and he's waiting to get rescued. And a boat comes by and boat says, "Hey, let's get in. We can go." And he's like, "No, I'm waiting for God." And a helicopter comes by and drops down rope and said, "Hey, let's go." "No, I'm waiting for God." And eventually he drowns and dies. And he gets up to heaven and he's like, "God, I kept waiting for you." And God's like, "I sent a boat and a helicopter. What else do you need?" Like, you don't realize that the people that come into your life could actually be the person that was sent in exactly the right time to be there. And if you're ignorant and just push them away, I mean, that's the idea that you need to be able to ask for help. And that was such a huge part of this episode for me because it really hits home to what many veterans need to learn the hard way, but not the hard way, because when you let go of that assumption and the crap, the ego, I always say the ego is the first thing you need to turn off when you get out of the military because it'll just set you up for failure. Learning to ask for help was such a powerful part of this episode that I'm positive that part will be a big theme in this episode that people take away from. As we wrap up this episode, what is a parting piece of advice that you want to leave for military dads? Something from your perspective, it could be anything that you want to make sure that like every dad, if this is one thing they take away, this is the piece of advice they need to understand.
I try to always come back to like love your kids above anything. So, you know, we teach about like the shooting and the other things and a lot of that, you know, how we were talking earlier about performance based, but really, you know, I think having that affirmation of, you know, they are good enough on their own, especially in their really young years, you know, I think that really sets up a lot of really great character qualities and everything.
And you mentioned the priorities with the kids. There's something that many veterans get hung up on, or it doesn't matter whether you're a veteran, you get this backwards, is recognizing that the priority and commitment to your wife is above all else. Like, the one thing that I had to learn the hard way as well, that whether it be this podcast that I've committed to, whether it be a job that I committed to, doesn't matter. All of those commitments will expire long before the commitment to my wife expires. And many people, even with your kids, we often prioritize our kids for 20 years. And then we realize, like, we don't even really know who the person we married anymore, because we became strangers and prioritized. And then the kids leave, and next thing you know, you probably maybe end up being a divorce. So it's so important to have it be your wife, your kids, and then whatever else you commit, because when you said I do, that was the one that's going to go all the way to 8 feet under. And oftentimes our priority never, or our choices every day, don't really reflect that this is the only priority that goes, or only commitment that goes to the end of time, or my time.
Yeah, definitely. When I was first, understood I was going to be a dad, I started, reading a bunch of stuff about parenting and everything. And, in my mind, it was, kids first, our kids first. I was lucky enough to read something that was exactly what you were just talking about. You really need to view it as marriage first, because that's obviously the foundation, parenting and guiding your kids. Statistics nowadays, there's a lot more, divorces and split homes and stuff, so, I think doing all our part, not only with our own families, but, in our community to keep as many together as possible.
And coming from a split family, like, it was probably very difficult for you to just work through, like, how to make it a not self-fulfilling prophecy, that because you grew up in a split family, that you were just destined to repeat that. And just having that awareness, you can begin to start changing your family tree. And there was an episode that was titled this, because it was such an important lesson: always kiss your wife first. And the dad that shared it with me shared it because he's like, I always want to walk in the door and kiss my wife first, because that symbolizes to my kids that she's my number one. And that example, I want them to realize when they grow up into being an adult, that the fuel and the love that I have for my wife is what you want to find for yourself and your life. And that you are important to me, but nothing is more important than here. That was such an important lesson they actually wanted to model to his kids, because that's a huge stepping stone for them to go out in the world and understand what love looks like and how do I bring it in my life correctly.
Yes. So, my family situation as a kid, I didn't get to witness that. And, now that I'm an adult, I see all the negative consequences from that. So right up there again with, one of the most important things we can talk about or recognize, and obviously try to practice on our own.
Well, Bobby, this episode has been everything that I hoped it would be. It's been an amazing episode 100, and now hopefully many more episodes beyond 100. That first 100 episodes is kind of like that first big milestone. And to think January 1st, 2019, that I would be here the week of Veterans Week recording this episode to launch this next coming week, I wouldn't even be able to fathom it, that I've actually even put out 100 episodes. Like, it just makes me almost stressed out from the amount of work that was, the amount of sleepless nights trying to make sure this podcast get out. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on and making this episode 100 super impactful, special, and just opening your heart and revealing who you are, and hopefully inspiring a lot of dads to come home back to their family, because fatherhood freaking matters. And if you lost a friend in Afghanistan or Iraq, like, don't let your job as a father fall because he died so you could go home and be the best dad you could be.
I can't thank you enough for having me on. This has been a huge honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That was an impactful episode, as I can imagine and I can remember on this podcast, because we really haven't had too many dads with his perspective on life and gone through what he's gone through and has to face life every day without a leg and an arm. And that was something, and his story will always leave an impression on my heart. And the big, big, massive takeaway, and the hint is in the title of this episode: always ask for help. I think that is a lesson that as veterans, we, as he said, he is continuing to learn it daily, and it's something he struggles with. But it is one of those lessons that has so many more rewards, because there's always someone ahead of you. There is always someone behind you. And as I've said before, be a barrel of monkeys, learning how to reach out up for help and down when someone is behind you that needs a hand. That is the best philosophy. And this is the solution, in my opinion, to a lot of the veteran crises that we have today, is we do not have a barrel of monkeys mindset. And I loved the way that Bobby brought it to us, that advice and the struggle. And he was really open about that vulnerability of learning to ask for help every day, even though it's been years since that incident. Every day he's had to regrow through that idea and reinforce that it's okay to ask for help. And I think the big takeaway also was that learning to love yourself. When he was talking about, and I helped bring that to the surface of before, he was really struggling to see his true worth and value on the inside. But on the other side, he was able to fully feel who he was. I think that is a core message that many veterans do not get in depth with. I don't think we get in touch with, and it holds us back from being the amazing dads that I know every dad listening to this podcast can become. And just a final wrap up, again, a special thanks to the team at the Busch Center, because this episode would not have been possible without you guys. I appreciate everything you've been supporting me with throughout this year and look forward to many more episodes, hopefully working in conjunction with you guys. And with that, I will talk to you guys again on Friday.